And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Andrew Iliff and David Holley. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup, and in this episode, we're going to be looking back at the 2-1 victory for Fulham against Rotherham United Tuesday night. Later on, we'll be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Derby County on Saturday at Craven Cottage. We have much to discuss in this show, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Holley, how you doing?
Well, you'll be disappointed to hear that I'm sober tonight. I haven't been haven't been knocking back the freebies on in first class on the train. I don't know. Last week it did really well. We got record numbers, didn't we?
We did.
I hope it doesn't affect our ratings this week.
Well, David, I'll take it either way. I mean, that was a very entertaining show last week. I expect this show to be just as entertaining, honestly, even with you being sober. All right, my friend. Let's now bring on Mr. Iliff. Andrew, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Very well, thanks, Russ. And hello, David. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be back here talking Fulham again.
Listen, it's great to have you on and to talk about the match on Tuesday night. Both of you were there, and both of you will be at the match on Saturday. So we have much to get through. So I'm going to start with you first, Andrew. Let's get right to the Rotherham United match. 2-1 victory for Fulham Tuesday night. Just your opening thoughts on what you watched Tuesday night.
I think it's one of the least enjoyable games that I've been to for the first half for quite some time. They struggled to get into the game. They seem to be a yard short every time, not quite getting to the second ball. And I said to father-in-law before I went, this could be a real banana skin for us. We're on form against the better teams. We tend to struggle against the lesser teams. And the conversation was having on the way to the match is Fulham need to find a way to win ugly. And I was obviously pleased to get the 3 points, but you know the second half was much improved. And dare I say, I think going a goal down was what they needed. And I hate to say that because it really got them back into the game. It bucked their ideas up, and we went on to get the 3 points. And the 3 points is all that matters at the end of the day. They could take a lot of heart from the game in terms of the way they came back, but to be perfectly honest, it was a game that we expected them to win. It's just the manner that they went around it was not so pleasing in the first half.
A very good point there, Andrew. And I've watched the replay now, and a match of two halves, you could definitely say them were Fulham were much better in the second half. And very interesting take about going down a goal, maybe that lightened the fire underneath Fulham and the players. And later on, getting into the first half and then into the second half. Very interesting point. All right, David, I want to get your opening thoughts. You and I talked about this match specifically last Friday. You said this match scared you, and this would be a test. This would be a major test for Fulham to play against a team like this. So, opening thoughts on the match, and did Fulham pass the test?
Well, just like to say hi, Andy. It's the first time we've done this show together. Welcome to Cottage Talk. Obviously, I'm an old hat at this one now. It's good that some other people come on and you know, mix it up a little bit occasionally. But yeah, so as onto the match, obviously. Now, this was, you know, it kind of doesn't answer the box-ticking exercise that we were hoping it were going to do. Because, you know, me and my stats, and sometimes I love to prove the stats wrong. But on this occasion, the stats were right on this occasion. We absolutely murdered them. I mean, you know, sometimes it's not true, but we had 4-1 possession. When have you ever seen 80-20 possession? Maybe Barcelona.
20%. Yeah.
I mean, that was ridiculously biased possession, I mean, in terms of one team over the other. And then, it wasn't one of these ones where we're sitting back and playing the ball between the back four to kind of boost the possession figures. We were all over the park. And the number of shots, you know, our superiority in the number of shots, the number of corners and everything else, every other stat shows that we completely dominated this match. So this wasn't this sort of the archetypal banana skin that we thought it might be, a team coming, shutting up shop and we're finding it hard to break them down, because we didn't. We got in behind them all the time. The reason why the score wasn't much higher or a much bigger differential was because really it was our final ball and our shooting that let us down when you look at it. Sessegnon was a little bit disappointing with his delivery. Frederick's got in some great positions, times, but again, his delivery was a bit disappointing. And of course, then when we got to things like Chris Martin missing a penalty, Tom Kearney blasting over several times, Aluku missing as he does anyway. And really, it could have been a battering, even though, and I take Andrew's point, I don't think we played anywhere near as well as we have done. We didn't quite have that fluidity that we've had, that sort of short, quick passing and movement. But Rotherham, they didn't do the job that you'd expect them to do, get behind the ball, frustrate us. And most certainly, the fact that they went 1-0 up, you know, I don't think it was good for us, really. That scared me rotten because I thought they've got their goal. they really can sit back now, but they didn't. They weren't able to sit back and soak things up. And we changed our tactics around in the second half. And, you know, it appeared to be more effective, although it was taking a little bit of a gamble withdrawing McDonald and withdrawing the defensive shield in front of the back four. But it kind of did okay. But down the left-hand side of our defence, we started very badly. Sessegnon had a bad first half. Maddle, uncharacteristically, had a bad first half, really. And on that side, we looked a little bit suspect to start out with. And it's testament to the fact that the rest of the pitch did their job, really. We did press them enough and we had the possession enough that we restricted them to very, very few chances. But it should have been a lot more. But we've come through the test, at least in terms of a point scoring exercise, that we've scored the points. We've got the 3 points. We didn't do a Burton Albion and slip up, fail to beat them. We got the 3 points. But really, you know, on another day, it should have been a hatful that I was saying is possible. You know, you beat Reading 5-0. This team are nowhere near as good as Reading. It should have been more. It could have been more. But it wasn't due to mistakes we made and due to our poor final ball and our poor finishing on this occasion.
So, David, it goes back to the issue with being clinical enough. And like you said, the final ball. Those issues showed itself up in this game. And I saw that on the replay. You guys saw that live. So very interesting the way that you're breaking this down, because this wasn't a situation where we weren't troubling them. We just weren't executing well enough to get the goals, like you said. And that's been a little bit of a recurring theme. You know, we should be, believe it or not, scoring more goals. I know that's crazy to say because we've been scoring a good amount of goals lately. But in this match, yes, definitely should have been scoring goals. David, Ryan Sessegnon actually, like you said, played poorly, but he actually had a nice shot on target. So I want to give him credit for that.
In the second half, it blasted it a bit at the keeper, really. Maybe a little bit more culture, he could have placed it. But you know, at the end of the day, he did the right thing. The fundamental thing is make the keeper make a save. You know, get it on target. Yeah. So, he was, and he got himself in a good position there.
He did.
But I totally understand the reason for giving Malone a rest. But I think with Malone there and better getting forward on the left-hand side and perhaps potentially better defending, because the first goal, I'm afraid I laid at the door of Sessegnon, the Rotherham goal. That was totally avoidable, I think, to give away the ball up the pitch. And it wasn't the only time he did it. But as I say, I don't want to pick on the young lad, because it's hard to, you know, to remember this kid is 16 years old,
16
you know.
He's, years old.
Yeah. You know, to be thrust in and do that. And to come into a team that has been pretty much very settled for the last few games. You know, initially he was getting a bit of a run out, but he hasn't. And it must be hard to do that. And the expectation is very high when, you know, Malone has done a pretty good job there in the main, considering, you know, the low expectations we had of him. So, you know, I don't want to be too critical of a young lad. As I say, he's got a lot of potential and everything to do well. But I was a little bit disappointed with, you know, how things come out. And I'm sure he probably was as well. I think, you know, you saw it. He knew he'd conceded the goal. He put his head in his hands and everything. Yep. But, you know, to his credit, he carried on. And to, you know, Slavisa's credit, he didn't sort of knee-jerk reaction and drag him off or anything. I did half expect at half-time to see him go, perhaps, and see Malone come on. But, you know, we stuck through it and we got the result. So at the end of the day, you know, the points are in the bag are the biggest thing, obviously. The goals would be nice, but it was okay. And, you know, the team, they functioned. We did the job. We got the points.
Very good there, David. Very, very good as always, breaking down the match. All right. Let's get into it a little bit more. Let's start with the first half. Andrew, I'll give you the first half. I want your observations. Before that, I'll just mention a few key moments, and you can just share overall what you watched at Craven Cottage. Let's just start off with early on, Rotherham United actually had a great chance to score from a mistake by Tom Kearney, but Danny Ward's shot was easily saved by David Button, but that was an opportunity. That was actually a very scary situation. And then, unfortunately, in the 19th minute, then you have the goal by Joel Knoll that gets by David Button to give them the lead. And they had the lead for a while, but then, of course, in the 32nd minute, then you have the equalizer by Stefan Johansson to make the score 1-1, and the half ends 1-1. But you've already talked a little bit about the first half not being a very good first half. So just share your observations of what you watched in the first half.
No, I think the first half was quite frustrating. And I know David's mentioned the Burton Albion game. It was just a bit of a concern that it was going to be one of those games where, you know, you press, and you don't really get anything out of it. And here, you know, we're facing a side who are fighting for their lives at the bottom of the table. Fulham are cruising high on confidence, and you're thinking it's going to be an easy day at the office. And you know, you get the feeling that the players came out and thought, you know, a similar thing, that they're scoring goals, they're playing well, the confidence is high. Rotherham are boss of the league. It's going to be an easy win. And I think from, you know, what you've mentioned about the first shot on target early on in the game. It's a bit of a warning sign as to what was to come.
That's right.
I know it was Kearney's mistake, but you know, he's been playing fantastic lately. He's just got to keep on doing what he's doing and carry on, which he did. And then they got the goal. And I think the crowd were, although they were cheering Fulham on, getting, you know, willing them on to win, there was an air of disappointment and shock. And it was a bit like, oh, no, you know, a bit concerned as to what's going to happen. But what impressed me was Johansson and his goal. I thought he was absolutely fantastic on Tuesday. I thought he played out of his skin, like he has done for the last two or three games. And I thought it's been brilliant. And to get the goal gives him confidence. We know he can score goals. You know, he's got an absolutely lovely touch. If you actually watch him play, the way he flicks it on the outside of his boot is really, really good to see. And his energy running up and down the pitch, you know, is to be admired. And I think the best thing, you know, for me personally, I know, as David's mentioned, the stats, we basically battered them, but we didn't win convincingly in terms of, you know, we've had missed a penalty, it didn't work out that way. And there was just a bit of a fear in the first half that it could be one of those days. Well, that's what I felt anyway. It could be one of those days where, you know, they frustrate you. And when they got the goal, there was a bit of a, for me, it was a wake-up call that I think they needed. And I never like to see them go 1-0 down, and it's horrible to see that. But, you know, it shook them into life a little bit for me. You know, they were chasing the ball down a little bit better. They were getting to the second balls a little bit better, and it gave them a bit of a focus, really. You know, the longer it goes on, I'm glad they got the goal before the first half, because the longer it goes on, the more worried you get, and the less chance you've got to actually break them down should they decide to put the 10 men behind the ball. But it wasn't the best first half we've seen for a long time at Craven Cottage. But we went in 1-1, all to play for in the second half, and as we know, we came out winners. I was a bit surprised, as David said, to see McDonald go.
I was just about to ask you that. But go ahead. I was going to ask you about what you thought about this substitution. That's going to lead us to talk about the second half. So go ahead right there.
Yeah, I can see why he kind of has just done it. It's a bit of a, you know, a roll on the dice to bring Piazon on. And you know, I think it worked well in the sense that, you know, he came on and provided the assist for the actual goal in the second half. But for me, you know, I thought you've got to take these risks. And I'm glad he took McDonald off over Sessegnon, because it could have been an easy thing to do. And you've got to be careful of protecting Sessegnon's confidence. He didn't have the best of halves and the best of games. But for me, the last thing you want to do is bring him off at half-time and shoot his confidence down. You know, we've had scenarios in the past where there's been an argument to have taken Nadal off. I think when he conceded the, I think it was the Norwich game, if I'm not mistaken, where it was thinking, you know, about taking him off at half time. It's just not good for his confidence. But you know, with McDonald, I'm sure it wasn't largely down to his performance. I'm sure it was more tactical than anything else. And I'm glad they did it because ultimately it paid off. And I think Slavisa has got to take the credit he deserves for that.
Very interesting, because when I saw it, I was very surprised that it took off McDonald and brought on Piazon. And David, I'm going to go to you. I'm going to have you analyze the second half. And what I do want you to do in your analysis, I want you to share your thoughts about McDonald coming off and Piazon coming on. What you thought of at halftime when you saw, well, going into the second half, what you thought of at the time, and then how it actually worked out in the end. So talk about how you felt in the beginning when you saw the change and then how it actually played out. But before we do that, I'm just going to share some key moments because I want your total analysis of the second half. I'll let you walk us through the second half of this match. Like I mentioned, to begin the second half, you have Lucas Piazon coming on from Kevin McDonald. The first major moment, obviously, we want to talk about is the goal by Floyd Ayite in the 54th minute. That gives Fulham the lead 2-1. They obviously had an opportunity to make this 3-1. 3-1, excuse me, in the 67th minute when Michael Maddow was fouled in the box and were awarded a penalty. Unfortunately, Chris Martin misses the penalty, so the match stays 2-1, and they see it out that way, 2-1. Obviously, there are other opportunities to score. You can share those as well, David, but I want your analysis of the second half.
Yeah, well, it was a surprising mood at halftime. We saw Piazon coming on. So expected some kind of maybe like-for-like scenario, but not to see McDonald go, because McDonald, you know, he provides that shield, that anchor. He does the dirty work, which allows people like Kearney especially to be able to play with freedom, and obviously Johansson as well. And my big concern in that, I saw that we're going to be switching to a 4-4-2 basically when we did that. I thought, well, you know, can we survive with Kearney as one of the two central midfielders? Because we have on occasions dallied with that before, one central midfielder and Kearney. We always felt that we're a bit lightweight there because Kearney's not someone who's going to get stuck in. How would we fare with that? And obviously, you know, that the situation was that Piazon went on the right and Aluku was down the middle. And again, I'm not struck on that. Aluku's a great runner. And he is, you know, running at defenders, he's fantastic. He can really, like, you know, cause problems. But it's his final shot that lets him down too often. And, you know, from wide positions, he's been, you know, a great creator, really, and set up a lot of mischief. But I'm not so sure whether down the middle he's as effective overall. He is certainly outside the box, but when he gets to the box. But anyway, so we've made that change. I've assumed purely that there was no injury concern. It was just, you know, tactical, because to me, if it had there been an injury, the key things they would have brought on Parker, which would have been basically the most like for like swap.
Exactly.
If he wanted to maintain the tactics. So I thought this is tactical. He's resting McDonald ahead of Saturday. He doesn't want him to get him booked, sent off, injured. He wants to shake things up. So yeah, Piazon's gone to the right, and Aluku's gone central. We've gone to like basically 4-4-2, and you know, we have really had a run at them. We've had a good go at them. And it has literally been one-way traffic the whole half. I certainly think as a team overall, we performed better second half than we did the first half. And Piazon was instrumental in the goal, which came quite early in the half, which is obviously a good thing to get when you've changed things around to get a goal. It sort of helps the manager realise that he's made a good move. And it puts the opposition on the back foot, of course. And it was a nice ball, I think, slipped actually by Aluku into Piazon, who's pulled the ball across for IET running into slamming past the keeper from fairly close range. And it was really one-way traffic. The penalty by Martin was very poor. It was nowhere near far enough away from the goalkeeper. It's a shame because Martin's done pretty well. And the last one he hit with confidence. Yeah, that's a real issue. We've had three penalties missed at home, or three penalties saved at home. It's a very poor ratio. Obviously, it didn't make a difference in this match, but in the QPR match, it did, of course. I'm not sure who else would be taking the penalties otherwise. Saturday, of course, tomorrow, Martin is ineligible, so someone else would have to take the penalties. And I think for Martin, really, it was a, you know, after having a little bit of a good run, he's had a couple of bad games. And there's only one person to blame for that, Russ. That's you last week predicting that he's going to score two goals, remember?
Thanks, David. You put the blame on me. Thank you.
Of course, I've got it. That's Andrew. That's part of the thing. If you've ever listened to the show, Andrew, it's always Russ's fault. Yeah, whatever happens, it's Russ's fault. Yeah, we just have to do that. Yeah, no one else is ever wrong, especially me. But Russ is. But I just find generally, Russ, and you have to agree with me, I think whenever you do back someone to score, it tends to kind of put the hex on them a little bit, doesn't it? And I did think that last.
My record isn't good. You're right about that. My record isn't good.
Last Friday, when you backed Martin to score at Wolves. You know, everybody's scored, haven't they, in that match? Literally, the whole team have scored twice over, but Martin hasn't. So please stay away from that. But yeah,
okay, I will.
You can back Martin to score tomorrow. I mean, it doesn't matter, is it? But, you know, I think, you know, getting back to the summary of the second half, for me, Martin, it wasn't one of his better games. He wasn't involved in play enough. And when we've done this really fast, slick play where everyone's linked up really well, Martin is often instrumental in that. As I said, you know, he can hold the ball up. You've got people running on beyond him, like Aluku or like IET, Piazon as well, Johansson, and people running in all directions beyond him. It gives him lots of options to flick the ball this way, that way. And he's pretty adept at that. I think, you know, this is why Derby used him in that kind of formation, because he had people like, you know, Johnny Rotten or whatever he's called running past him. And
Johnny Russell.
Yeah, Johnny Rotten. I like, you know, I've got funny names as well, Andrew, don't worry.
I know.
And like our friend from Sheffield Wednesday, whatever his name was, I think Mr. Snapchat or whatever it was. But Lewis, was it Lewis Snapchat? That one anyway, yeah. But yeah.
Lewis Snapchat, but thank
you. Yeah, Lewis Snapchat, that's the one, yeah. Something like that. But yeah, no, Martin has shown when he was at Derby, he was good in that role, holding the ball up, bringing others into play. But it didn't really come off for him on Tuesday in the second half. But anything but a Fulham win would have been a complete and utter robbery. You know, it really was a mass domination. In Rotherham, I think, you know, this is where the table doesn't lie. You know, teams can be very adept at coming away from home. And the ones that can come away from home and frustrate and get the points are the teams that can survive. The reason they're at the bottom is because they weren't able to do that. They weren't able to come and frustrate us. Even though they had their noses in front, they got the ideal start to get the early goal.
Sure did.
But they weren't able to contain us. We were still getting behind them. And just with better luck, better final balls, better finishing. It would have been another 5-goal plus for Fulham. It really would.
Okay, very good there, my friend. And it's funny because I'm curious your thoughts when I'm just about to read the stats, because, you know, there's one giant stat that jumps out to me, and I'm sure it's going to jump out to you. So I'm going to go over the full-time stats with both of you to find out what stands out to you. So let's start with possession. We've already talked about it, 80% to 20% favor of Fulham possession. This is the one that stands out to me. Total shots, 30 for Fulham, 8 for Rotherham United. On target, 11 for Fulham, 6 for Rotherham United. Corners, 14-2 in favor of Fulham. Crosses, 34-4 in favor of Fulham. Tackles, 18-6 in favor of Rotherham United. Attempted passes, I had to do a double check of this one. 718 to 183. Attacking passes, 396 to 48. Passing accuracy, 86% for Fulham, 46% for Rotherham United. Accurate passes, this is another one that just stood out to me. 618 to 85 for Rotherham United. Aerial duels, 20 to 18 in favor of Fulham. And fouls, 12 for Rotherham United and 10 for Fulham. Okay, David, what stands out to you to full-time stats?
Well, it's just every category, literally. It's just complete domination, isn't it? It's annihilation. Yes. They should have really thrown the towel in and, you know, put the white flag up sometime during the second half. I mean, the passing, you know, we had like 800 and something. They had 100 whatever on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not surprising, I suppose. If you've got 80% possession to 20% possession and you've getting into the final bits of the pitch, it shows how much, you know, we had. And it's just, you know, the worst statistic is the goals, the ones that, you know, it should have been, the goals should have mirrored the stats. They really should. We honestly, this was a game where we could have won 10-0, as I was jokingly predicting beforehand. And I know these things never happen with Fulham. It's not the Fulham way to do it like that. But really, if the match had been 10-0, you'd look at those stats, you'd say, yeah, I can believe that.
Now, good point, David. But in the end, and this is a good thing, they still found a way to win. I know this team is last in the league, and they're there for a reason. They still found a way to win. All right, Andrew, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
Well, I'd echo everything that David said, to be honest. I didn't realize it was as much of a domination on the stats as it was. And it wasn't one of those games where Fulham seemed to pass it for passing's sake. You know, there was purpose, and there has been over the last, month's worth of games at least. There's purpose with their passing. You know, it's pretty clear what they're trying to do. And it's just a shame that we didn't get more goals, really. They've been on fire in front of goal recently. And it's just a bit disappointing that they didn't, make it easier for themselves. It's a bit of a concern missing the penalty, but I think they'll bounce back from that. I just think they need a bit of consistency in the penalty taker. But, as David said, the only thing that wasn't overly great was the goals. But, as we've seen over the last, four or five games, we've been absolutely spoiled for goals. And you can't win like that every week like we did against Reading. Sometimes you've got to win, just take the points and run and move on. And I think that's what we've got to do with Rotherham. Yes, we should have won by more. We could have easily won by more. But the fact of the matter is we didn't. We got the 3 points, and that's all that matters. It's a tough game tomorrow. They've just got to clear their heads, focus on what they do best, stick to their game. Because it's pretty clear. I know, you've spoken a lot recently on the show about Fulham having that identity. I think they've got that now. I think people know what they're about. I think people know what Fulham can do, and I think we've just got to do what we do best, like we did against Rotherham, Reading and Huddersfield, and just play our own game, and the results will come.
Okay, very good there, Andrew. All right, I'm going to go right back to you. Quickly, who was your man of the match? And give a rating for Slavica from 0 to 10.
I think in terms of man of the match, I voted on the app for Johansson, and I'll stand by that. I thought he was brilliant. If you watch the way he passes the ball sometimes, the intricate flicks, it's not easy to do. It's hard. And he makes it look so effortlessly easy. It was Johansson's goal that got us back into the match. It gave us belief going into halftime, and a platform to come out for the second half to win. And I thought he was fantastic. You could see him putting in 110% every game, which is what you'd expect as a bare minimum from these guys, considering what they're getting paid and what their actual jobs are. I thought it was fantastic. And I think he's got that bit between his teeth at the moment and that confidence. And, it's really showing. So I'll go for Johansson. In terms of rating Slavica, I can see why he put the team out he did. It raised a few eyebrows in terms of Sessegnon and Maddle, certainly starting. And part of me, given no disrespect to Rotherham, was a little bit surprised that Parker wasn't playing, just because of, Slavica talking about using the whole squad. And I thought this may have been an opportunity for him to do that a little bit more. But he didn't. He played Madeline Sessegnon, and I thought credit to him, really. And to make the change at half-time was a brave, bold decision. I think it shocked a few people in the ground and those that were watching the match afterwards. But we got the 3 points. We came out. We battered them in the second half. And I think that's, largely down to what happened in terms of substitution. Piazon came on, got the assist. Got the assist for the winning goal. Brilliant. So I would give Slavica a solid 8 for this. Okay. Maybe even 8.5.
Okay, very good. All right. David, over to you. I definitely want your man of the match while you summarize everything, along with your rating for Slavica. But quickly, I know you like to do the ratings of the players, so if you could summarize that fairly quickly, and definitely want your take here.
I'm not going to do all the players individually, but in the main, everyone contributed, put a lot of effort in. You know, the stats show that overall it's a very, very good team performance. Just a couple of sort of honourable or dishonourable mentions. Slight question mark over Button on the goal. Could he have done better? Some people are saying that.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, and this has been a theme the last few games. I wouldn't complain too much about Button overall otherwise, but, you know, my friend and boss was actually at the match as well on Tuesday, and he played semi-professional as a goalkeeper for years as well. And he's, you know, he says that Button doesn't command his area like he should be doing. And that's a problem we've had at Fulham. I don't think Bettinelli does it either. And I think Mike Gregg on a previous show alluded to this, that there has been this sort of call to bring Bettinelli back. But overall, it's kind of a much this scenario. Not sure if you could really split the goalies very much. If you had someone much better to come in, but, you know, maybe Button does need a shake-up. I don't know. You can't blame him for the goal, but, you know, maybe from there on another day, he would have got a hand to it. So otherwise, you know, he did what he had to do in the main Button. So an average performance by him. You know, Madden and Sessegnon definitely poor first halves, improved a bit in the second half. Otherwise, everyone did, you know, pretty well. I'd say probably with the exception of Martin, I thought he had a bit of a poor one for him. He didn't really get involved very much and missed the penalty, of course. But boringly, I'm afraid, I have to totally agree with Andrew about man of the match. And I think it's almost every game at the moment. Stefan Johansson is, he's got whatever that is. It's what we've been lacking. That's what it is about him. You know, he has that ability to do everything in midfield, really, to tackle, to win the ball, to pass, to run, and to score goals as well. And that coming into the box late is such a great quality to have. So I don't think many people are going to argue with me on that one either. I'm pretty sure that Johansson would have been most people's choice for man of the match. He just encapsulates this renaissance that Fulham have got since he's been in the team and since we've sort of changed our shape slightly. As regards Slavisa, I didn't think of that, but I think Andrew made a really good point in there. There really probably was a good, you know, reason why did we not start with Parker. If he wants to give McDonald a rest, Parker hasn't had much game time recently. Why not give Parker the start for a change? Would have made sense, really, to protect McDonald completely, especially if he had plans to take him off at halftime anyway. The one change that I completely predicted was obviously Tim Ream to be dropped out of the team, though I did expect was to see Sigurdsson come back in. So it was a surprise to see Maddle. It's a shame he didn't acquit himself better. Sessegnon, I think Mike Gregg, when I was talking to him before the match, he said to me he expected that to happen. So Mike Gregg right again there. But I'm not sure if it was the right move. We got away with it, but it was a little bit skin of our teeth, to be honest, and it shouldn't have been. But in the main, Slavisa's did most things right. He wasn't quite happy with things. He's changed it at halftime. He's taken a gamble, taking McDonald off, changing the shape. But ultimately, I don't know if you noticed, of course, he's then gone back to his original shape and basically positions by taking Aluku off and bringing Parker on. He's reversed his halftime substitution, if you noticed. And we've gone back to having Parker in the holding role with the two central attacking midfielders. And in this case, with Piazon and Aiti as the wide men and, you know, the one up front on his own. So we had that spell, obviously, when he's changed it, but ultimately he's ended up the match playing exactly the same formation, basically, as he started the match with. So obviously, he's trying to think about things as we go along. So, you know, I think I'd give him probably an 8 out of 10 as well. This was a massive banana skin.
Yep.
And I think we avoided slipping over on it just a little bit. So 8 out of 10 for me.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, before we get into our preview, we actually have two questions that were posed on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. So I'm going to give each one of you one. David, I'm going to start with you because it's from Briefcase Ben. This is the question from Briefcase Ben that I'm going to give to you. Ready? Here's the question from Ben. Should we buy Lucas Piazon on a permanent deal, David?
That's a good question. I think he's done pretty well, Piazon, really. He was first choice for a few weeks. He's come off the bench and done quite well. I think it's going to depend on the price, really, that at the end of the day, because, you know, you could argue that he's keeping other people out of the team. I don't know, Cabano, Yozabed, maybe people who are our players, who, you know, LVC's not even getting onto the bench at the moment. So it's got to be the price has got to be right. I've been, you know, I think he's done well, and he's probably been a step up from what we've had in terms of quality. He's got a good quality about him, but you know, do the other team in Fulham want to sell him? How much is the price? I think if we can get him at a good price, yeah, I'd take him.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Very interesting take on Lucas Paez, and very good question from Ben. All right, Andrew, over to you. I have a question from Mr. High Noon himself, Gary Cooper. Here's his question. Okay. We seem to have a constant back and forth as regards to defense. We look to have sorted it, then we look fragile again. Why is this, and how can we fix it? And Jokanović a few weeks ago was encouraged not to drop David Button over his shaky performance by everyone, mostly Jokanović, and he seemed to have sorted it, but now again he seems nervous. So if he's dropped, it will dent his confidence, and if he plays, we have to see what side of the personality comes out. Should he be dropped? How would you handle it? This is about David Button.
It's an interesting one, because Bettinelli's played, you know, extremely well recently in the under-21s. And I think Button, it's a tough one. I'm almost struggling to answer that. I think I would stick with Button for the consistency. The back four know what Button's about. They know what to expect from him, and they know what he's good at and where he possibly needs help. And considering, you know, a large part of the back four, and new to the first team, or certainly half of them are new to the first team, I think that consistency is key. I think what will be interesting and what will be able to kind of help us answer that question more will be early in the new year when we have the FA Cup game. I'm presuming he'll start with Bettinelli, and we can get a closer look at him in the first team. It's okay doing it at Motspur Park, but it's out there when it matters. And it'll be interesting to see whether he's been working on commanding his area that bit better, or whether he's, you know, still the same player he was when he played for us. But for me, I do like Button. I'm a fan of Button's, and I think he's, you know, done well since he's been in. There's always going to be question marks over your keeper when you're conceding goals. And at our level, unfortunately, there's very, you know, few keepers out there that are, you know, absolutely amazing keepers. Otherwise, putting it bluntly, they wouldn't be playing for a championship team. Right. So you're always going to expect, you know, a few mistakes. But for me, I'm happy with Button since he's come in. I think he's played a large part of where we are in terms of our defence. I might be giving him a little bit too much credit there, but I'm happy with him, so I would keep him for now. And I would possibly look to address that question after the FA Cup game in the new year, to see if Bettinelli plays, and indeed how well he plays, because, like we said, he has been playing well recently in the under-21s, and it wouldn't be a surprise if he, you know, was chopped and changed in the coming games, and I don't think it would be, undeserved either. He's okay, done well, and it'd be interesting to see whether his chance is now sooner rather than later.
Okay, very good. Very interesting questions and great answers by both of you. Thank you very much, Gary and Ben, for sending those questions on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. All right, guys, it's time to get into our preview of this upcoming match Saturday at Craven Cottage for Fulham against Derby County. David, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to give you a stats comparison between the teams that I put together and get your thoughts on that. And then I'll go to Andrew with some other information from WhoScored.com on Derby County. But I'm going to start with you. Let's go through the stats that I got from WhoScored.com. This is within the league. With possession, Fulham are currently second at 57.7. Derby County are 10th at 50.6. Shots per game, Fulham are first in the league at 16.1. Derby County are 9th at 13.2. Aerials 1, Fulham are last in the league with 17. And Derby County are 14th with 21.6. Passing success, Fulham are currently first at 82.9. Derby County are 8th at 76.7. Crosses per game, Fulham are first in the league at 24. Derby County are 12th at 20. Through balls, Fulham are still first in the league with 3 per game, and Derby County are tied for third with 1 per game. Long balls, Fulham and Derby County are both not good at long balls, which is interesting because I think it's the style of football they both play. Fulham are 23rd in the league with 68, and Derby County are last in the league with 67. Short passes, Fulham are first in the league still with 490 per game, and Derby County are 7th with 371. All right, David, what stands out to you with the stats between these two teams?
Well, you know, unless I was hazing over there with all the stats, it sounded to me that in most of the criteria, we actually we outranked Derby, which is, you know, quite promising. The one thing that I think is very true is the aerial balls. We don't seem to have a particularly, you know, aerial dominating team. We're not a big team particularly. We don't really pose a lot of threat at set pieces in the traditional way, you know, from winning corners, heading them in. Obviously, Maddle's not particularly tall. Even, you know, Carlos is quite good in the air, but he's not the biggest central defender. He's a little bit bigger, but he's not the biggest guy. And again, you know, even in Sigerson, I've pointed this out before, he doesn't seem to jump very much. So I don't think we're that dominant in the air. But that said, you know, if we're playing a team that perhaps are all long ball football, high ball football with big players, then maybe we should worry more. But I think we're up against a team tomorrow that's going to try and play football as well.
Correct.
I think it's quite ironic that we're first in the league with 3 through balls a match. And it doesn't sound very impressive, really, 3 through balls a match, not really. And to be bottom of the league, you have 1 3 ball a match. You know, that's a strange one. But yeah, I mean, passing, you know, I saw a stat somewhere the other day that it was all the teams in Europe, literally, from the top leagues in Europe. And we were up there with
all the big
boys. I think was it with Reading as well, maybe, but or someone.
I think Reading was up there too with Barcelona, you know, and Borussia Dortmund, I think.
But you know, as you said before, you know, you can pass the ball among the back, and that was what we've been guilty at the past, having possession but not in dangerous areas and just messing around with it. Whereas we are starting to be much more sort of penetrating now with our possession and passing, and so this is really, like, you know, not the banana skin scenario. We're looking the other thing out. We've got a team here that want to play football, but we technically, on most of these criteria, we can outperform them on our day. On the average day, we will pass the ball more than them. We'll put more through balls through more than them. They'll come to play. They won't, you know, theoretically be there to shut up for a draw. Maybe they will, but that's not really the Derby style of play, is it? They've been successful going out to win matches, not grinding out, you know, draws away from home. So they'll come to play, which hopefully will be good for us, but they'll be aware of that. And so you never know what we'll see tomorrow. But this is certainly a winnable match. We shouldn't fear them too much. You know, this is just the same as playing Huddersfield and Reading at home. We saw them off very easily. We can do the same if things go our way, if we stick to our averages and our percentages.
Okay, very good, David. I'm going to go back to you in just a second and share with you the comments from Steve McLaren, the manager for Derby County. I actually got it from the Fulham website. It's quotes from him, because I think maybe what I'm going to read to you is going to give you an indication of what they're planning on doing. But I'll get back to you in a second. I want to go over to Andrew, because Andrew, I want to share some other information to you that there's one number that's very telling with Derby County. I'm going to read it in a second and also give you some more information. I want to get your thoughts on Derby County and continue with our preview. So let's start where both teams are on the table. All this information is from WhoScored.com. Derby are currently 5th, 10 victories, 5 draws, 6 losses. They've scored 21. They've only given up 13. That's the stat that stands out to me. Their goal differential is +8, and they're on 35 points. Fulham are currently 10th. 8 victories, 8 draws, 5 losses. We've scored 36. We've given up 26. We're on a +10 goal differential, and we're on 32 points. Now here's some info on Derby County. Strengths: defending set pieces very strong. Protecting the lead strong. Weaknesses, only 2 weaknesses listed. Finishing scoring chances and defending against long shots. Style of play, control the game in the opposition's half, attack through the middle. Take long shots, short passes, non-aggressive, consistent first 11. Opponents, though, play aggressively against them. Their leading goal scorer is Tom Ince, and I did an interview yesterday with Andy Buckley Taylor. Please do check that out on Blog Talk Radio. He'll give you some more information on what to look for from Darby County. But the player that he mentioned most was Tom Ince, and Tom Ince is their danger man right now. All right, Andrew, what stands out to you from the information I just shared to you?
I think what stands out to me is how hard they are to break down. To only concede, I think it was 13 goals all season.
13 goals, yes.
That tells you a lot about their defence. It tells you a lot about how they're set up, and it tells you a lot about what you've got to do to break them down. You have to go at them. I think with Derby, they've changed their centre back from Shackle to Pierce, Alex Pierce recently, and I think that's been a revelation for them, to be honest with you. You know, the way he's come in and really made that position his own. You know, let's not forget he's taken out Jason Shackle, who is a Premier League defender not too long ago. I think, you know, I'm not surprised Tom Ince is the danger man at the moment, because given the strikers that they've got, they need to find the goals from elsewhere. And I think Tom Ince has stepped up to the plate with that, and he's proven to be a very valuable player. You know, he was up for a lot of stick at the start of the season for not chipping in, but now they've gone on an incredible run, winning the last seven games, and he's played a huge, huge, huge part of that. I think tomorrow's clash is going to be an absolutely mouthwatering clash of two teams that want to play. And I think I agree with what was said with the interview with Andy yesterday. I think it's going to be won or lost in midfield. But I think Derby are going to come open to play. I think Fulham needs to be, it needs to be a 90-minute performance, not a 45 or a 60-minute performance. And I think if they can go direct and Kearney has a good game and Aluko, for me, has to have a good game, then I think there's a very good chance that they can come away with the 3 points.
Okay, very good. I'm glad that you mentioned my interview with Andy Buckleterre, because we did talk about the middle third, because that's where both teams are dominant. Action zones right in the middle third. Derby County are at 45%. That's where they spend the majority of their time. And Fulham are 44%. So I think the battle will be won with their three in the middle, you know, because they play a 4-3-3 of Will Hughes, Bradley Johnson, and Jacob Butterfield. That's what Fulham need to really deal with. And, of course, the danger man is Tom Ince up front. He's the one that you should be looking to really worry about, because everything that I saw when I was watching highlights on him, he was everywhere. Tom Ince was the player to look out for, but it really is about their midfield, and it really is about Fulham's midfield. So it really is going to be a battle there, I think. All right, David, over to you. Now I'm going to read some quotes to you that come from Steve McClaren. I got these directly from the Fulham website, but obviously they come from the press conference from Steve McClaren. So here is what he had to share about this upcoming match. Quote, "This will be a big test for us on Saturday, because Fulham are a very good team, and especially at home too. This is a great opportunity and a challenge for us. Fulham will be one of the teams, for me, that will be in the playoffs this season. They score a lot of goals and are an attacking side. We need to take care of the ball and defend very well down there. When we get the opportunities, we need to hit them on the break and score in that kind of way. I saw them against Rotherham in midweek, and that's how they get into the lead. That's how we need to win the game, with a solid foundation, real discipline, and the ability to be effective when we go forward." All right, David, what do you make of the quotes from Steve McClaren here?
Yeah, that's to me, that does sound up the sort of thing that worries me most. If we do have a weakness, that ability for teams to just catch us on the break, go through the middle sometimes. You know, we saw it at Wolves. We kind of saw it really with Rotherham as well. You know, Rotherham got capitalised on an error. And you know, the guy was pretty quick there, shot well from just the edge of the area, outside the area. And it was a goal. And I think, you know, that is where you would have to worry, that sometimes we just run the risk of overcommitting ourselves. But we do have, thankfully, more pace in the team. You know, and there was another situation, if you remember. There was this guy made a fantastic recovery, actually, this the Rotherham player. Did you see that? That he was dead on the pitch one point. We thought he needed, you know,
we're going to have
a funeral service. And suddenly, about a minute later, the ball's come. And it was a mistake again by someone. And he was like, I've never seen someone run as quick as that. And even Ryan Fredericks was having trouble keeping up with him. And we just, in the end, Ryan Fredericks just did enough and allowed Sessegnon to get a foot in. This guy, though, but he was like, went from being dead to being, you know, Usain Bolt or something, you know.
I think it was their number nine, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But he then collapsed again later on the pitch and went off. So didn't help him. But yeah, and then that is the risk that we run. I think that is what I would fear most about Derby, them getting the ball down the middle, catching us out, catches on the break. Thankfully, perhaps it said that they weren't, you know, one of their weaknesses is not converting their chances as well as they should do. That certainly is a weakness for Fulham. Although we've scored a lot of goals, we have created a lot of chances and things as well. So for me, you know, I'm hoping that maybe that's why they wanted McDonald to have fresh legs, because he needs to be on top form tomorrow to protect that back four.
Absolutely.
If we do go on the attack, someone has got to be there to try and keep the back four protected. And that's where we failed last year. No one protected the back four. Too often, the opposition were running at the back four. There wasn't anyone in their way. They've only got one man to beat, literally, and they've got a clear shot on goal. So McDonald to do his job tomorrow is vital and everything else.
David, I totally agree with you. And he was everywhere in the Wolverhampton Wanderers match. He was very key in that match. So I might as well go to you. Would he be one of you? I'm assuming he's one of your key players tomorrow for Fulham against Derby County. Is there anyone else that you look to that needs to step up to get this victory tomorrow?
Well, again, we need Johansson to carry on doing what he's been doing, really. You know, McDonald being tight, winning the ball, using the ball well. Johansson buzzing around. And it means they have to take one eye off Tom Kearney, and he can be very dangerous as well. And it's in that middle where we really can win the match. And then, you know, they've already got to worry about Johansson and Kearney now. And then you've got Aluko and Aiti to run at them as well. Yeah, the big question is going to be, you know, I'm sure when it comes to that in a minute, who is going to replace Chris Martin? What tactics? And I've seen some very interesting things on Twitter earlier. I did comment on one because I couldn't believe that someone suggested playing Aluko there as a central striker or even Woodrow.
That, by the way, I saw that.
And I thought with Aluko and Woodrow's kind of ability to shoot on target, that wouldn't be the way I'd be going with it. I mean, I won't beat about the bush. I wholly expect it probably to be Matt Smith tomorrow. He's the only one I think that really does get close to that, unless
he changes things up, David.
Yeah,
but unless we'll he talk about that.
Yeah, a rabbit out of the hat and changes the formation completely.
Yeah.
If he's going to go to the same kind of scenario, I can't see anyone else really playing there but Matt Smith. It will be a different kind of game, most certainly, but it'll be the one that's least dissimilar to the other options, I would say.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, Andrew, over to you. What a Fulham need to do to win this match against Derby County? What would be your strategy against Derby County?
Mine would be to attack down the right. I think that's where they are. They're weaker.
Yes. That's what Andy said, by the way, too. That's what Andy said.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think with the pace that we've got on the right-hand side, I think that's where they can attack. And I think that's where they can really expose them. But don't get me wrong, it's going to be tough. I was watching Fredericks at the end of the game against Rotherham, and he put some miles in as well. But towards the end of the game, he was huffing and puffing, and he looked absolutely spent, to be honest with you. So I know he's had enough time to recover, and they've had the extra day on Derby, which I think is going to be important in terms of the preparation. But I think Aluko and Fredericks need to have a blinder. I don't think Fredericks can have many passes go astray on the right hand side, and I think Aluko needs to, you know, to be full of tricks running down at Olsen if he starts. So for me, it's down on the right hand side attacking their left. But another one for me as well would be And I agree with David in this in terms of Johansson. But I think they've got to really man mark Will Hughes. He's got the ability to pick any pass at any point, and he can literally destroy a team in a second. So if they're going to get anything out of this game, it has to be by marking him out of the game. You know, he's a lively midfielder with a real eye for a good pass, and you know, he's opened his account at the weekend with Forest, so he'll be confident. So for me, attacking down the right, and I think they've got to nullify the threat of Hughes.
I've not mentioned Ince
because I think that speaks for itself.
Sure.
You know, he's on form. We know what we need to do with Ince, and then it becomes a very interesting game. But that's where I kind of see the game being won or lost myself.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, because you brought up a good point, and I've been hearing a lot of talk about this. Fitness. How much will fitness play a role in this? I'm talking about to the advantage of Fulham. 3 matches in 7 days. Nottingham Forest, QPR, and now Fulham. That started on Sunday, and then they played Wednesday. Now they're playing Saturday. So would that factor in to Slavisa's mind of how he might play in this match, how he might set Fulham up, Andrew?
Absolutely, I think it has to. I know these guys are professionals. This is what they're trained for. But the Championship, especially, is a brutal league, and it takes its toll on players. And you've seen it all too many times when people drop down or come to the Championship, and they take a while to adapt. But I think the advantage is definitely in Fulham's camp, that the fact they've had the extra day. They've played 2 home games, whereas Derby would have been down to London twice this week.
Yeah.
You know, and I was reading an interesting article saying, should Derby stay down in London for their preparation?
I was actually surprised that they didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not an easy trip coming down, but at the same time, it's not a long trip either, but it's still a trip nonetheless. And I think it's definitely to Fulham's advantage. There could be no question. And I think, you know, if they do go down the route of pace being one of the ways to get at Derby, I think it's going to play a part. And like I said,
yeah,
Fredericks was absolutely spent. Johansson runs out of his skin. And had it been the other way around, where they've had another day and we haven't, then there's cause for concern. But I think we've definitely got the advantage on that side.
Yeah, and I agree with you going down the right, but I think pace in general is an advantage in this match because of fitness and also just the way we play. I think we should be using that to our advantage and get as much pace out there as we can, because I think it'll wear that team down. That's the way I look at it. All right, guys, let's now talk about the starting 11. We have to start talking about this. David's already talked a little bit about it. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. I want your thoughts overall on the starting 11, but who would you start as a striker? Because unfortunately, Chris Martin cannot play. What would you do? I've heard all different scenarios. I've even heard possibly Stevie Humphrey. I think he might be on the bench. I don't know if I would start him, but what would you do? Would you go with this? I think the safe move would be to play Matt Smith. There are other options. David also mentioned one, maybe changing the formation. What would you be doing with the starting 11 in regards to the striker position and overall with the starting 11?
I would start with Smith. I think that's you know how we've been playing. Although Smith's a different player to Martin, he's similar with his attributes as to what he can do in terms of holding the ball up. Martin's got a bit more up his sleeve in terms of trickery and flicks, whereas you know with Martin you tend to Smith you tend to find it's a bit more route one at times. But I think for me I would go with Smith up front. I'm not in favour of having Luke Hull up front with him. I think he plays better out on the right, cutting in, crossing in, and running at the defence and the goal from that side. So I would go with Smith up front. I think the advantage, you know, of bringing in, possibly bringing in Humphreys, it's the advantage of youth, isn't it? You know, you would hope that nothing would faze him, but for me, I thought Smith was playing really well at the start of the season. You know, there's a bit of a revival from Smith. And I hope that he sees this as his chance to stake his claim on goal. In front of goal.
Right.
And that, you know, he takes it. So I would stick with Smith. I wouldn't change anything other than Smith.
Okay.
But in terms of the defence, I would change Maddle and bring back Malone in as well.
I was just about to ask if you were going to bring back Malone, and very interesting. Okay, David, let's go back to you about this. You've already kind of mentioned that you would play Matt Smith. What are your thoughts about Stevie Humphreys? I know he's playing at a different level, Premier League too, but he's scoring goals for fun. Would you at least have him on the bench if you were Slavisa in this match?
It's still hard to get him on the bench, remember, in the way that things have been recently. Matt Smith didn't make the bench the other week, you know. Slavisa's had this thing for playing three defenders on the bench or having three defenders on the bench. We've seen consistently Sessegnon, Odoi, and a central defender, or Malone, obviously, as it was this week for the Rotherham game. So three places already taken up. There's only really been one striking position, and in one match, the most attacking player was Cabano on the bench. So I don't know if there is a space to get Humphreys on there. I mean, reading between the lines, Humphreys has been saying a lot of things on Twitter, hasn't he?
And I've seen that, yeah.
Bigging it up as if he is involved. So I don't know if perhaps he's been picked to be in the squad, but maybe he'll be like the 19th man and not make the cut, or whether he will actually make the bench. This is where I'm at a loss because I haven't seen him play. I don't really know what he has to offer, but I'm assuming he plays that kind of, you know, Martin Smith type role of striker as opposed to sort of a small sort of nippy guy. So perhaps there is a possibility that he could come on the bench as a sort of deputy for Smith if things don't work out, or because Smith is quite renowned for probably not being a 90-minute player, you know.
Right.
He's a big guy. And so it's a potential we might see Humphreys on the bench. You're right. It depends on the makeup of the team. But I think what we can be sure about is we will see Malone back in the side.
Oh, I agree there. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we'll see Sigurdsson back in the team. I think we will be back to literally the team that we have seen. And the reason that he's not going to change it too much is because it's been successful. It's worked. And if he puts a completely different type of striker up there, it changes the whole focal point of the attack. You know, people like Johansson and Aluku, you know, rely on someone to hold the ball up and keep it for them, I think, as much as anything. That's a lot of their game. They can't just run with it from midfield and take everybody on all the time. You need, you know, a target man, a fulcrum to all of it. So the logical choice of me would be to play Smith. I think Woodrow is too far down the pecking order now, although he can do sort of a holding up kind of job. You know, he's not been on the bench even, let alone anything else. It has been Smith who's been the, you know, the bench option. So I'm not sure why Woodrow would jump ahead unless, of course, he feels that he can do a better job of matching Martin. But I think Smith would be the one to play. Malone will be back. I would imagine Sigurdsson will be back in alongside Callas as well. I don't see him jumping to change the goalkeeper at this stage either. I agree with Andrew, really, that I think when the cup comes and it's not far away now, that's the perfect opportunity to give Bettinelli a chance, maybe. You know, and from there, Bettinelli can build on it. If he has a good performance, then he can ask questions of the selection. If he doesn't do very well, Slavisa can say, well, you know, I made the right choice in putting my faith in Button.
Okay, very good there, David. All right. It's time for predictions. I'm now going to go to the Cottage Talk Twitter poll. I had a good amount of votes. I had 203 votes, guys. So let's start with loss, 15%. Draw, 41%. Win, 44%. Okay, Andrew, I will now go to you. Your prediction for the game tomorrow, Saturday.
I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it's going to be an entertaining game, but I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Okay, so you're going for the 1-1 draw. David, over to you.
I have Anthea Turner's a TV personality that I once met. I have Anthea Evans' words ringing in my ear from the other week when you guys all predicted a tight match for Reading and it was nothing like a tight match. And I tend to go with what Andrew says here, that my gut feeling is it will be a tight match as well. I don't know if we can just turn out and slap them. So I think it's much more likely to be something in the order of like a 2-2 than it is a thrashing either way around, really. So I think that's where my that's where my loyalty is going to go, to stick to a 2-2 and just hope that Anthea can tell me off for being boring as well on Sunday. That, in fact, it was another thrashing for Fulham.
Okay, very good. All right, before I give my prediction, I'm going to read some predictions from the Fulham supporters on the Cars Talk Facebook page. We have a good amount of them. I'll just read some. Jason Gaines has 2-1 to Fulham. Andy Newland, 1-1. Ryan Fulick, 3-1 to Fulham. George Kenton, 0-0. Guy Rolfe, our Cars Talk co-host, 3-1 to Fulham. Lewis Worley, 3-0 to Fulham. Stephen O'Keefe actually has 1-0 to Derby County. Mia Cutler, 3-1 to Fulham. Stephen Collins, Steve FFC Collins, 2-1. James Eade, 1-1. Brendan Cronin, 2-2. And Dean Rozier, 0-0. Okay, time for my prediction. David, I know you're afraid that I'm going to put the kibosh on someone, so I'm going to be very careful of who I give the goals to, but I'm going with a 2-1 Fulham victory. I am going to say the goal scorers are going to be Tom Kearney and Sone Aluko. Okay, David, those are my two goal scorers in this game. Okay. Okay, very good. Listen, great show by the two of you. Before we go, I always like to get final thoughts. Over to you, Andrew, your final thoughts before we go, my friend.
I think it's going to be a great game. I'm glad Fulham are playing well at the moment. It's going to be an interesting period for Fulham, and I think if they carry on, where they're at in terms of their points return over the last three games, and get 7 from the next three games, it'll put them in good stead for the playoffs. If we can get through the Christmas period, sneak into the top 6, I think we've got a good chance, and see where the new year takes us. But in terms of tomorrow, very exciting game. Really looking forward to it, and can't wait, really.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. Final thoughts before we go.
No, I'm just hoping it's going to be a successful day trip for me down to London again. And again, this is, we have less kind of worries about a team coming to shut up shop on us. We can hopefully be able to play more free-playing football. I look back to the final point is the match when we did a job on them a couple of years ago, I think it was. And Scott Parker, if you remember, absolutely did a job on Will Hughes. We talked about Will Hughes earlier in the show.
I remember that, yeah.
And, nothing is impossible. And we're a lot poorer team then than we are now. So why not? Why not go out and do a job on them? But I'd like to say, Andrew, it's been a pleasure to do the show with you. It's nice to do the show with new people. Much as it's nice to do show with familiar people, it's nice to do with new people as well and hear their views and stuff. And, thanks for coming on, and I hope you do lots more shows.
No, thanks. Thanks for having us as well, David. It's been a pleasure. And likewise, Russ, it's always a pleasure. I hope we meet again on the show soon. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Listen, you guys were fantastic together, and really, really great chemistry, the two of you. You guys were both really good on the show. So thank you to both of you. My final thoughts actually involve you, David. I just want to say thank you for again, doing this show at the last minute, twice, again, coming down from London, coming home. And first time, you had a few drinks from, from that Virgin train, and this time you were sober. And my final thought is, David, whether you have a few drinks in you or you're sober, I enjoy doing the show with you.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, Rush. And I know I'm always a bit mean to you, but it's all meant with a good heart. And even poor old Brendan started now. He spent 1 hour with me in London a couple of weeks ago, and how he started on you as well, hasn't he? I noticed.
He has. You're rubbing off on him.
I'm very sorry, Brendan. You're a very naughty boy. Don't copy me. but don't take it personally, Russ. We all love you anyway. Thanks for having me on. Thanks
Not
for having
problem.
Me on again.
Not a problem. Listen, great show, guys. Seriously, this was a great show. I also want to mention one last time to please check out my interview with Andy Buckley-Taylor. You can listen to that on blogtalkradio.com on the Cottage Talk page there. You can go right on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. I put it on Twitter. Please check that out. If you want to hear the opposition view from a fan, check out that interview. I thought Andy was excellent. He'll give you some insight on Derby County going into this match. All right, guys, it is time to wrap up Cottage Talk. For David and Andrew, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.